There is nothing worth living for unless it is worth dying for. My grandmother lived a life devoted to Jesus, and today her talks have been made available in their original form. So you too can be built up through the insights and mysteries God revealed to her throughout her ministry. Now, without further ado, here is Elizabeth Elliot.
Speaking of this book, some of you can see that it has just a very little text at the top, and then the rest of the page is empty. And he used to say that the reason there's a huge blank on every page is so that every one of us can write across it in large letters, guilty. Now, Amy Carmichael was a woman of tremendous compassion, very great gifts, great love, but she was as straight as a die. And she had set her face like a flint, and she would not allow anything or anybody to deflect her from that. And she is speaking to herself as she writes this book, If. For example, if I hold on to choices of any kind just because they are my choices, if I give any room to my private likes and dislikes, then I know nothing of Calvary love. If I put my own happiness before the well-being of the work entrusted to me, if, though I have this ministry and have received much mercy, I faint, then I know nothing of Calvary love. If I am soft to myself and slide comfortably into the vice of self-pity and self-sympathy, if I do not, by the grace of God, practice fortitude, then I know what? Nothing of Calvary love. It is a tough book. It is not one that you're going to want to read for recreational reading, but I recommend it. If you only want to read one of Amy Carmichael's books, and she wrote 40, and 14 of them are still in print, I recommend that you start with If. You may not want to go any further. Jesus humbled himself and became obedient unto death. And that is what you and I have to do. We're not going to be given probably anything very heroic or dramatic or noticeable to do. Very unlikely that many of us will be given anything like that. But Paul says in Philippians 3, I want to know Christ, the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his sufferings, becoming like him in his death. What does that mean to us? John Henry Newman said, the taking up of the cross is the continual daily acceptance of small duties which are distasteful to us. You might want to write that down. The taking up of the cross is the continual daily acceptance of small duties which are distasteful to us. And I think of my dear friend, Miss Cumming, from Augusta, Georgia. She grew up in one of those beautiful mansions with white columns in the front and servant quarters in the back. And dear Miss Cumming, when she became a Christian, was completely disinherited by her very wealthy family. They would have nothing more to do with her, and they cut her out of the great wealth that she would have inherited. Now, I don't know what in the world Miss Cumming did for a living until I knew her when she was my house mother at Wheaton College. And a house mother has to do all kinds of things. Well, she became my Sunday school teacher as well, so we used to walk to church every Sunday, and I often went in, maybe two or three times a week. I would knock on her door, and we would talk, and I would pour out my troubles to her and tell her how awful everything was. And once in a while, she would tell me some of her little trials and tribulations as a house mother for about 200 girls. And one day, when I went in, there she was, very little, short, dumpy woman with a very ample bosom that she had a very charming way of sort of clasping. And she called me Betty. Now, of course, my name is Elizabeth, and one of the worst nicknames for Elizabeth is Betty, and I was always called Betty for the first 25 years or so of my life. My father called me Betsy, my mother called me Betts, but everybody else called me Betty, but not Miss Cumming. You know, Georgians know how to draw things out and shorten things, too. You know, Lars lived in Mississippi. It's only got three syllables the way he says it. But Miss Cumming called me Betty. And I went in, and that day she said, oh, Betty,
I came to Wheaton to be a spiritual counselor. But here I am carrying not mops and toilet paper across the campus.
Well, you know, that made a deep impression on me because I knew what her background was, and I knew that Miss Cumming had never had to carry mops and toilet paper in her life until she became a house mother. But she wanted to be a spiritual counselor. She was indeed a spiritual counselor. We were blessed by having such a godly woman, single all her life. But the fact that that woman, given her kind of background, was prepared to carry mops and toilet paper across the campus tremendously enhanced the power of that servant message. Her spiritual counseling meant so much more to me. And many years later, when my second husband and I were in Florida, we visited her in the retirement home where she was. And I told her, I reminded her of what she said to me that day. And she said, "Oh, Betty, did I really say that?" And I said, "Yes." And I told her what it had meant to me. And she said, "Oh, Betty, just think of the mercy of God that he allowed me to carry mops and toilet paper for him, for his glory." The nature of a servant. It is a question of an assigned place. The anchoress accepted the assignment of gluing children's toys. Jesus got down on his knees and washed the feet of one who was going to betray him and one who was going to put him into the hands of wicked men. Acceptance must be cheerful. And the third thing, action. Jesus says in Luke 22, "I am among you as one who serves." In that passage, you remember that the disciples, just after Jesus had broken bread with them, began to have a discussion as to who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And he said, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors, but you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I am among you as one who serves." My prayer is, Lord, let me never forget what price you paid to serve me. The glorious, high and mighty, majestic Son of God, he whom the angels, to whom the angels cry, "Holy, holy, holy," he who made the stars, the galaxies, the oceans. We look out on the ocean from our house and I see those tides and I realize that the tides are perfectly obedient to God. They are always high when they're supposed to be high. They are always low at the exact minute that it says on a little chart that I have on my desk. Perfect obedience. The one who was in charge of all of that put himself in the hands of men and was nailed. Those hands that made the stars were nailed to a cross. Think of the example of Mary. Immediately when the angel gave her a staggering piece of news that she was to become the mother of the Son of God, what was her attitude? "Behold, the handmaiden of the Lord. Let it happen as you say. I have a 13-year-old granddaughter who signed her letter, who signs all her letters to me, handmaiden of the Lord, Christiana." I thank God for those who recognize the truth of this very obvious teaching of Scripture. Mary's assignment was unexpected, unimagined, but it was immediately embraced. Will you not only accept it, but will you embrace it? In order that you may become like him in his death, it is death to myself, death to my preferences. If I hold on to choices of any kind, Amy Carmichael says, simply because they are my choices, then I know nothing of Calvary love. What did we see on the cross of Calvary? Love so amazing, so divine. It demands my soul. my life, my all. Duty, which is what a servant is here for, requires that we often have to do what we don't want to do. And it requires very often that we want to do what we can't do. But we are at someone else's disposal. I am not my own. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my lips and let them move at the impulse of thy love. Take my hands and let them be filled with, what is it, tasks for thee. A servant has no personal agenda. A servant's attitude is not my will. And this is what it means to become like him in his death. But you know, we never need to end on the thought of death and impersonality and utter disposability. Because Jesus was willing to accept that position while his assignment was to be here on earth, God highly exalted him. And you and I cannot even imagine the glories, the mysteries which will be revealed if we're faithful, if we humble ourselves, if we're willing to carry the mops and toilet paper or to glue the toys or to peel the onions or to do the dirty job at the office, whatever it is. The nature of a servant requires a radical shift in attitude, an acceptance of an assigned place, and the willingness to perform duties which may require that I do what I don't want to do, and I cannot do what I do want to do. In that way, I am making tiny steps toward becoming like him in his death. God bless you.
I pray you've been encouraged and inspired by what you've heard today. And will keep joining us here and on social media for My Granny's Inspiration. Until then, remember, the eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms.